Stay tuned for Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah, featuring two film critics with distinctly different tastes in movies, Charlie Jewell of charliejewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. He thinks her tastes are shallow. She thinks his are pretentious. Listen in as they discuss and debate new releases and other film-related topics. Let the clash begin.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Cinema Clash. I am Charlie Jewell, and with me as always is my brilliant co-host, Hannah Buchdahl.
Why, thank you, Charlie, and as always, it is my pleasure to be here with you.
How you doing, Hannah?
I'm doing good.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing okay. How are you?
It's an odd week for film. There's no blockbuster. Nope. Batman is now 2 weeks old, and no studio is still going up against it. There's really no big release this weekend. There's God's Not Dead 2, and shockingly enough, we didn't get to screen that.
Darn. Well, I didn't see the first one, did you?
Well, we didn't get to screen that either, because movies that are geared toward religious Christian audiences, they select the critics who get to see it, and naturally, we don't get to see it. But God's Not Dead made a lot of money for a religious film. About, you know, 7 to 10 religious films get released every year. Some hit, most miss, but God's Not Dead cleaned up at the box office last year.
I had no idea.
And so naturally there's a God's Not Dead 2, but we're not going to talk about that tonight.
That's right. Moving on.
So yeah, Batman versus Superman is still all over your television, your radio, and social media, but you know what? We already talked about that.
We did, although I just want to point out that I have seen it since we talked about it, and we were spot on with the fact that what we had to say about it doesn't matter at all. People are going to see this movie if they're into the genre.
Agreed. I mean, there's a lot of vitriol I see on the internet. There's a lot of hate. There's a lot of why all the hate. But, you know, I don't see a lot of love.
And I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. But I certainly am not in the hate camp. So I think anybody who wants to see it, go for it.
And people are saying, you know, this is a strike against critics. This means critics don't matter because critics slam this movie, yet it's still made, you know, $400 million. And you know what? That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
It's but not.
what we are going to talk about this week is, you know what's an interesting follow-up? It's called Everybody Wants Some with 2 exclamation points.
And not
that's
actually
part of the title. It's 2 exclamation points. Everybody Wants Some. And it's by Richard Linklater. If that name doesn't quite stir a memory in you, it should, because he is the gentleman who brought you 12 years of Boyhood. 2 years ago, he almost cleaned up at the Oscars, but he just lost out to Birdman. He brought us Boyhood. But before that, in 1993, he brought us Dazed and Confused, a high school movie, a stoner movie. It brought us Matthew McConaughey. It brought us Ben Affleck. And now, people are saying, some people, Everybody Wants Some is the spiritual successor to Dazed and Confused. It's a college movie. Dazed and Confused was a high school movie. Now we're in college. Some people, I am certainly not one of them, say it's actually a sequel to Boyhood. Huh. Boyhood, if you remember, ends right when he gets to college. Everybody Wants Some begins the first weekend of college. Huh.
Hmm. Okay.
No overlapping characters in any of the movies we just said. No overlapping characters, but think of that. Yeah, that's interesting.
Well, I think it just goes to show what kind of movie this guy likes to make. He just likes to make these day in the life, year in the life, decade in the life movies, and this is another one.
I think it is kind of autobiographical because Richard Linklater was on his college baseball team. And Everybody Wants Some is about the college baseball team. I never actually heard what college they were at in the movie, but it sounds like
Southeast Texas.
I think that's a fake college, Southeast Texas State or whatever.
Well, considering there was no oversight of this baseball team living in a house off campus, I would hope that it's a fictional campus because otherwise, I think somebody would be in trouble.
So let me set the scene for you. It's the Friday before classes start, the Friday before the Monday, where the first day of college. Jake pulls up to this. He's blasting My Sharona on his 8-track in his Trans Am, and he pulls up in front of the baseball house. And it even tells you on screen, August 26, 1980. So I was like, huh, I was 12 days old. Anyways.
Out!
Jake, he's played by Blake Jenner. I do not know if there is a relation.
I actually looked that up. Apparently,
no,
there is not to either Bruce or Kylie.
And so he is he's a baseball pitcher, and he's going to the school on a scholarship. And this is kind of there's a lot going on here. There's a lot of introductions because this is a big ensemble cast. It's an entire baseball team. I think they have enough characters here to fill a baseball team and the bench. But there's very little baseball in the movie. This is about Jake becoming familiar with his strange surroundings. You know, big fish in his high school, little fish in his college. Everyone there is, you know, better than he is now at baseball. You got the older seniors, the veterans. You got all the new freshmen. And what they do is they just mess with each other. They pull pranks. They make fun of each other. And at any moment, any time, anyone can be the target. And Jake picks up on that real quick. And, you know, he's actually comes off as the normal guy in a baseball team full of relative oddballs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the stoner. There's the very intense guy who calls himself Raw Dog, who's just, I give 150% all the time. There's the guy who probably should be in major leagues, the oldest guy, the captain, the team captain. And you got the guy who reads Carl Sagan and says,
the philosopher guy.
The philosopher guy. So there's kind of one of each.
Yeah.
And this is Jake introducing himself to the team, introducing himself to college. And Everybody Wants Some is, in my opinion, a boy's dream of college. Free beer falls in their lap. Chicks fall in their lap, and like different chicks every night. And this is a small college. I think this is an idealized version of college. There's no college out there like that. Maybe if you're a football player, but critics, the vast majority, seem to love this movie. It's 92% on the tomato meter. The critics we saw it with were there for like the third, fourth time to see this, and I'm missing something. I am not feeling this movie, Hannah.
Surprisingly enough, I'm not either. So I'm kind of with you on that, probably for different reasons. But I don't quite get why some people are so in love with this movie. But then again, I wasn't in love with Boyhood either. Sorry. So I do think that it's there's a definite nostalgia factor. So I think anyone who was in college in the early 80s, as some of those critics were that were there that night for the screening, or just could really relate to certain aspects of it. The nostalgia factor includes the clothes, the soundtrack. I mean, I felt like I was watching people who could have been in an episode of Chips or Starsky and Hutch. That's the vibe that this movie gave off. But I found it to be rather boring. It just dragged for me. I knew that it was going to eventually end when classes would start. And so every time they put something on screen that indicated a countdown to when class would start, to me, that was the countdown to the end of the movie. One big thing, though, that people need to be aware of, if they do go to this movie and they are enjoying it, you got to stay through the end credits because there is a bonus number at the very end.
You know, I was walking out of the theater when someone said, sit down, you're going to miss something. It's like, fine, I'll watch. And it was funny. It was cute.
I mean, if you sat through that whole movie, you might as well stick around and see what that little bonus is.
You know, its closest cousin, I think, is something like Animal House.
Mm-hmm.
College hijinks, college guys. But the problem is, Animal House had conflict. They had to fight against Dean Wormer, and they had to fight against Niedermeyer, and that other fraternity, the snobby fraternity. They had conflicts to overcome. And Everybody Wants Some, there is no conflict.
There's no obstacle.
There's no one giving them hassle. There's no one hassling them. There's no obstacles.
If
they want the girl, they go get the girl.
Yes.
If they want the beer, they go get the beer. Mm-hmm. There's no one standing in their way. If they want to have a toga party, they could have a toga party. And I described it as it's light as a feather. Nothing interrupts that feather. It just floats on the wind from one party to another party, from a mud wrestling pit to one baseball practice. There is one baseball scene in the movie.
And they do get across the point there that these guys do love their baseball. So it's really sort of in the order of it's about drugs, sex, chicks, booze, more booze, and baseball.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much the heart of this movie. And again, it is a slice of life movie, so it's very slow paced to me. And you really need to, I think, like and appreciate that style of movie and not be looking for something with major drama or with a real plot. And either you're going to like it a lot or you're not.
I think a good move on Linklater's part is I didn't know anybody in the movie. It's a very large cast. Mm-hmm. And he cast a couple dozen people full of unknowns, which is awesome. I'm glad I didn't know anybody. It's kind of like the same Boyhood, even though you knew Ethan Hawke and what's her name, Arquette.
Right.
Patricia Arquette.
Patricia Arquette.
And that's about all you knew. But in this one, I know nobody. And there's a couple people that I'm going to watch out for, because some people were very good. Especially the girl who plays Beverly. Her name is Zoe Deutsch. I really liked her.
She's actually the daughter of Leah Thompson and looked a lot like her. Yeah. So if you go and you look at a picture of her mom and you look at her.
Yeah. You know what? Now that I'm trying to place the two, like Leah Thompson, Back to the Future time frame.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is a little similar.
Yeah. So that's who that is. There was also one guy who to me just looked so much like a young Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, Will Smith. One of those baseball players.
There's one black guy.
There's one black guy, and it's him.
It's J.E. Quinton something.
Yeah, but he, to me, he just looked so much like Will Smith in the early years, and it was a bit of a distraction for me because I just thought it was a little eerie. But it is. It's an ensemble picture, and it's just, again, it's just sort of a weekend in the life of a bunch of guys who live unsupervised in a house off campus.
Well, the 1980 is before my time, even though I'm gonna claim I was alive during the time frame. But I did recognize the skinny shirts, the knee socks,
the tight
Tom Selleck mustaches. Everyone had like a Tom Selleck mustache.
The tight t-shirts, the tight jeans, the shorty shorts. Oh yeah,
and that hair. They had that. I don't know. It's not 1970s hair, but it's a definite era hair there.
It was in my teen years, I would say, and so.
Everybody moves in with their creative LPs. Yes. Did you have your creative LPs?
I probably did have a crate, and then I had, the tape, the cassettes. But the 8-track cassette in the guy's car, I mean, there were definitely things that that rang a bell. And it was entertaining in that nostalgic way, but not something that I can heavily recommend.
Well, I want to emphasize, me and Hannah and I are in the minority. Everybody loves this movie, and we usually disagree on everything, but we agreed, like, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I'm missing it.
Yeah.
So there's a very good chance. In fact, there's a 92% chance. If you go see this movie, you're gonna like it.
I hope we hear from those people, though, because I'm just curious to know if it really is a critic's choice and not necessarily a mainstream audience's choice.
You know, it's rare that it happens. Usually the audience likes a movie better than critics do. The scores just come out the way. But every now and then, and it's usually with Oscar movies, critics like the movie better than the audience does. Yeah. And in this case, I wonder if this is that rare kind of mainstream movie time where critics like it more than the audience does.
I think that might be the case, but time will tell.
Well, here's the next film we're going to talk about. Tie-in, transition, Ethan Hawke is in this one. We just talked about Ethan Hawke was in Boyhood. I think this is a case where the critics might like it more than the audience does, because I didn't care for the next movie, and I don't know yet, but I have a hunch you didn't either, and I don't think the audiences will either, unless they're really into the subject. It's a music biopic. We've had so many of those, especially last year. They were documentaries. Now we're getting into the era of the year, the time of the year, where the music biopics are like films, fictionalized films of these famous people. And our first one we're going to talk about is about jazz. It's about jazz trumpeter Chet Baker. For a time there in the mid-50s, Chet Baker was more popular than Miles Davis.
And Dizzy Gillespie.
He shows up in this film. And Ethan Hawke plays Chet Baker. Chet Baker had a problem. It wasn't with the trumpet. Apparently he was very good with the trumpet, even though his scenes playing the trumpet, they didn't blow me away. He loved the heroin.
Yep.
He loved the heroin, and he knew he loved it. He's like, I know what heroin does to me, and I know I'm in this jail cell in the beginning of the movie, and I have no money, I have no friends, I have no family, got no wife, but oh, give me some more heroin. And it's not really a music movie. Trumpets in the background. It's a drug movie.
It is.
Hannah, it's a drug movie.
It is. I didn't really enjoy this movie. To me, it was like listening to slow jazz. You just kind of are trudging along with this movie, and it's a lot of drugs, a lot of booze, a lot of, he's got the girlfriend who's with him for some reason that I could not even begin to explain, and it's like falling asleep to a slow jazz album, and that's kind of how I felt as this movie just kind of plodded along with this same theme. You've got Chet Baker's attempting to give up the heroin and make a comeback, but it proves to be a very difficult path for him, and he gets in a lot of trouble. He gets in fights, and the movie itself doesn't really satisfy on any level, I don't think. When it ends, it just it's just over. And I also found it, you know, it's a fictional, it's, I think they called it sort of part semi-fictional. And those ones that aren't really necessarily totally true to the story, that always bothers me a little bit. Because, like, well, where are the lines drawn? I don't know. And so...
Well, usually in a case like this, you would say, if you're a fan of jazz, go see this movie. But I can't say that. There's really hardly any jazz in this movie.
Yeah.
It's about a man who starts out at rock bottom. Like, he's in the Italian jail cell. And he's hallucinating a tarantula crawling out of his trumpet towards him. And a Hollywood producer, and this really happened, Dino De Laurentiis, probably a very famous name people know, shows up there, pulls some strings, gets him out of there. He wants Chet Baker to star in the Chet Baker movie. This really happened. And he screws it all up because Chet Baker runs into his old drug dealer who knocks his teeth out. Guess what you need to play trumpet, Hannah?
That's right, you need teeth! This movie needed some teeth. Ethan Hawke, though, however, I mean, Ethan Hawke is good. He's always watchable to me. I think he commits to any role that he does.
I think he went out and learned some trumpet.
I think he did, and I think he really believed in his character. And so, you know, more power to him. It's his performance is good, but his performance is better than the movie is. And I think his love interest in this movie, I can't remember her name.
Her name is Carmen Ejogo. You remember her from Selma. She played Coretta Scott Keane.
I knew she looked familiar. And she's fine in this movie, but I think she plays some sort of composite character of all the women that he was messing around with.
Yeah, apparently she's like four or five women put together.
And again, I just was like, why would this woman be with this guy, considering she wanted to have her own, you know, he basically attempted to ambush her career because he wanted her with him all the time. And she became sort of his muse and he couldn't play as well without her. And it was just, you know, again, her performance is good too, but the movie to me just, it kind of, a flat note, you might say.
Ooh, a little flat. I like that.
A little flat.
I liked her. I liked him. I didn't. Yeah, you're right. I didn't like the script. You know, you can't tell Chet Baker's story without the heroine. I mean, you can't. And everything you just talked about with her. Why is she with him? Well, he needs her. And I think that sets up. I really liked the end. It sets up.
Okay.
I'm not going to give it away, but it sets up a hell of a scene at the end.
Yeah.
And it's based on kind of nonverbals and body language. And
yes.
I felt the first time for the whole movie. I felt something and.
I was relieved that I stuck it out to the end to see the very last.
It's the best scene in the movie.
It is the best scene in the movie, and I was tempted because again it was a screener. I was watching it at home. I was tempted to turn it off about an hour into it because it was just dragging to me. But I did stick it out, and the end helped redeem it somewhat. But again, unless it's somebody who's a real jazz fan. Who doesn't care about jazz. In this story. Well, or who's interested, you know, who's heard of Chet Baker and would maybe want to know a little bit more about his story, you know, fine. But for the majority of people, this is not going to be the jazz movie that you'd put at the top of your list, and there are many others to be found.
Well, Born to Be Blue reminded me that I don't like movies about drugs. They bore me. There's only so much you can do stumbling around in a stupor. There's a handful of exceptions. I liked Requiem for a Dream, mainly because of Ellen Burstyn and Jennifer Connelly. That movie still holds up. I like Trainspotting, just because that's a good time. But everything else, I hate movies about drugs. They are so slow. I have a problem. I'm going to take some drugs. It'll be sad. I'll hurt my family around me. I'll try to get better, but I probably won't, and I'll relapse, and... It's so monotonous, and this is, it's not a jazz movie, it's not, it's physical, it's overcoming narcotics, and it's, man, this guy had some demons, Hannah.
Yeah, although it is a jazz sort of pace.
Well,
you know,
Miles Davis like shows up, like, you know, and...
Again, it just was paced like slow jazz, all the way from beginning to end.
Well, that is not... The only music biopic coming out this week, and I did not see the second one. You did. Tell us about I Saw the Light, and more importantly, who is it about?
Well, I saw the light many, many, many months ago, and so I actually have a hard time remembering much about this movie other than the fact that I didn't think it was all that good. It's about Hank Williams, a country singer who, the one big thing I discovered was he died very young. He died at 29, tragically.
Whoa.
And so that to me was the most fascinating part of this
tale.
You
didn't just give something away, did you?
No. And again, I think you can Wikipedia Hank Williams and pretty much find out that. But it's, you know, Hank Williams, it's another biopic. He's played by Tom Hiddleston. Who I do really like it. People will know him, remember him as Loki.
He is Loki.
He is Loki from in all the Avengers and Thor movies. And he's very good. And when this movie is him playing music and singing, what like the big song that people might know that Hank Williams did was like My Cheatin' Heart. And so that's My Cheatin' Heart. Come on, Charlie, sing it.
Yeah, I'm looking at you, and I want to help you.
Anyway, it's...
Is he convincing? Like a lot? Does it look like he practiced?
Yes.
He looks like he studied the original material?
Yeah, he is very good. He's very convincing. When the performances are happening with him and with the woman who plays his wife, it's entertaining. But overall, this movie was as I think I had written down months ago, it's a hot mess. And I thought the reason they pulled it, they had actually pulled it from its original release date because I think they initially thought that they were going to be able to put it out there for award season.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew immediately watching this movie that there was no way it could compete. And I think the studios did too. And so I honestly thought that they were going to take the time to somehow try and fix it and rework this movie. And from everything I'm hearing about people who've now seen it, this week, they didn't fix it. There was no way to fix it. And so I suspect it remains a hot mess despite the fact that Tom Hiddleston makes a very good Hank Williams and plays well and is good to watch when he's front and center in this movie. But the script, the story, it fell apart. And it tries to be like a walk the line kind of movie, like a Johnny Cash sort of, you know, this guy who's trying back, you know, occasionally trying to redeem himself and then falls back into the same bad behavior patterns that threaten to destroy his career and his relationships. Also, his wife is sort of trying to ride his coattails and become a star with him. And she's not very talented, so that becomes a source of contention in their relationship. And so the movie tries to be all these different things and doesn't take you anywhere and just falls apart. And it's a shame because it could have been a better story. It could have been a better script. You had a really good actor in that role, but it does not work.
Yeah, I saw the movie poster. Was his wife Elizabeth Olsen?
Yes.
The Olsen, not twin, not but the Olsen sister with talent.
Yeah. Yeah, and so she's fine. She's absolutely fine in this movie too, but it just wasn't good. The movie is just not good.
Yeah, I remember when that happened. We were going to go out that night, I think, to see a screening. It was late November, early December, and the studio pulled it, saying, you know what, we believe in Tom Hiddleston's performance so much, and we know he's going to get overshadowed by Michael Keaton and Leonardo DiCaprio and Michael Fassbender. We're going to pull it, and we're going to send it to next year, and maybe more people remember it. And you know, and when that happens, and it's not the first time that happened. That happened with Nicole Kidman and Grace of Monaco. I think that's a signal.
No.
They know they kind of have a turkey on their hands.
And we knew everyone who was at that screening, which would have been canceled if they had not pulled that movie right at the exact same time that the screening had already been canceled or that the screening had already been scheduled and we were all going to be there. I walked out of there going, they knew somebody saw this movie and went, uh-oh, and pulled it. And I'm disappointed to hear that apparently they were not able to fix it.
Well, something I'm more interested to hear from is another movie you got to see this week, and I didn't get to see it, but everybody is talking about this movie, and it's called Midnight Special, and I saw that it's got one of my favorite guys in it, Michael Shannon,
mm-hmm.
and I want to hear Hannah's take on Midnight Special.
I kind of liked it. I like Michael Shannon. I'm a huge promoter of him in the movie 99 Homes that I will still hope go and see. He's very watchable. He's just a good character actor compelling to watch kind of guy.
You know, we were just talking about Man of Steel last week. He was General Zod. Remember that?
Right, right. So this one, you know, he kind of takes front and center, but this movie is strange. I don't really know how in the world you'd categorize it. I think it's being billed as a sci-fi thriller, but it's about this guy who takes his kid on the run he either kidnaps the kid or rescues the kid from this cult compound, and they are going on the run cross country, and you start, as the story unfolds, you realize that the kid has some weird mystical power, and he's either a satanic kind of character, or he's a godlike kind of character, or he's an alien or a weapon. And you just have to watch this movie unfold. It was written and directed by Jeff Nichols, who did Mud with Matthew McConaughey.
I love that movie.
And Take Shelter.
I hated that movie.
And it's sort of paced the same way. And so if you like those, well, so now I don't know whether you'd like it or hate it. But it's paced similarly to Mud, and you just have to watch it unfold to figure out exactly what's going on. It's this guy, also this kid, Jaden Lieberher.
We just saw him in The Confirmation.
Exactly.
And he was in St. Vincent.
Yes. And so I'm looking at this kid going,
another road movie.
Wow. I feel like I've seen this kid in a very similar movie. And he's been in three very similar movies very recently, and he's very good, but he was in The Confirmation. It's sort of the same deal. It's this father and son, you know, kind of adventure movie.
And St. Vincent was not father and son, but it was father figure and son.
Yeah. Huh. So he has had a very busy time in that same sort of role for a couple of years now, and he's still only probably like 9 years old.
He still seems very tiny.
He's very small. But he's very good. And then Joel Edgerton is also in this movie, and he's very good. He plays this friend who helps the dad take the kid on this little cross-country road trip to try and save him from the church people that are following him, or the cult people that are following him. And the government is also interested in this kid. And it turns out, and so the Joel Edgerton character is has seen something in this boy that compels him to help this family on the run, and you pretty much don't know why until very late in the movie. And it just, again, it slowly unfolds. It's very captivating, but it's strange. And in the end, it reminded me of, and again, I'm not sure this was before your time, but I would call it a very bizarre reimagining of Escape to Witch Mountain. And I don't know if you ever saw Escape to Witch Mountain, but it was about these two alien kids, Tony and Tia, who relatives help them kind of get back to their own world. And at
sounds
the very
like E.T.
It was, and a little bit of E.T. It has a little bit of E.T. in it. It's got a fair amount of violence, and at some moments it's very gripping, and at other times, you're just kind of like, I don't get it. What exactly is going on here? And so it's, I don't know. I think you should see it. It's interesting, and the performances are all very good. Kirsten Dunst is in it as the mother.
She's a mother?
She plays the mother to this kid.
They grow up on you, don't they?
Yes. Well, and I kept thinking about her in Magnolia, which I hated because there is a supernatural.
Wait, when you think of Kirsten Dunst, you think of Magnolia?
Well, it just reminded me how much I hated that movie because it was sort of supernatural influence.
Magnolia?
Wasn't it
called Magnolia? Are you thinking of Melancholia? Or?
Maybe. Was that what it was called? The one where she was like in a weird...
yeah, Melancholia.
Oh, sorry. Melancholia. Like sorry. Melancholia. Thank you for remembering that movie because I didn't remember the name correctly. But she was in that one, and it was just a very weird, mystical movie. And there is a mystical element to this movie. But she's decent. She's not in it very much. But again, I think as indies go, and with these particular actors, and the story is interesting, I think if you're into that, if you liked Mud, I would definitely say you might like this one and you should check it out.
No, I'm very excited to watch this. It sounds like it's right in my wheelhouse. I loved Mud. And this happens, you know, a good handful of times a year. I mean, like once a month or once every other month, an indie bubbles up and everyone starts, have you seen Midnight Special? Have you heard of Midnight Special? Everyone's talking about Midnight Special. And this is just happens to be, I think, March, April's version of that story. It happens a lot. And I think it actually happened with Mud when that came out. It happened with Take Shelter. I remember I went to see that and, okay, I'm going to love this. Everybody loves Take Shelter. And it's like, oh, man, I did not love that movie.
Well, I didn't love any of this week's movies, but I would probably put Midnight Special at the top of what I did see in the past week.
Well, I saw one you didn't see.
Yeah.
And I guarantee you would have hated this movie. So last week we talked about a French movie, Marguerite, which had, you know, umpteen thousand César nominations, and it won for Best Actress for Marguerite. Well, this one had a bunch of César nominations. It's another French movie. All the French movies are coming out in this 3-week time span. But this one won Best Director it's called My Golden Days. And the director is Arnaud Desplechin. And he is a very famous French director, so he's very well known in France, not so much on this side of the pond. And this is an unofficial prequel sequel, because it's about, we've seen this technically, if you've seen this older movie from 1996, I forget the title right now, and well, I didn't see it. A lot of people did not see this movie.
I'm but sure I probably didn't either.
It's the same character. It's even played by the same guy, Mathieu Amalric. And this, so we've seen the character before, but it has nothing to do with that movie. Now he's a French researcher and a French expat, and he's been out of France for like 10, 12 years. He's in Tajikistan right now, and he's finally hanging it up, and he's coming back to France. He's going to work in like the foreign ministry because he's so good with, you know, he knows about the rest of the world now. And he's looking back. He comes back to Paris. There's a problem with his passport. They think he's a spy, so the intelligence officer starts to interrogate him and says, you know, ask him all these questions about his past. So we go back into My Golden Days. And the first one is he goes back to his childhood, and we see his mom, who has severe mental problems, who ends up committing suicide, and his dad gets deep depression. Then jump ahead, best part of the movie, he takes a class field trip to Belarus, Minsk. Back then it was under the USSR, and they do this really cool clandestine subterfuge thing where they give money and passports to these Soviet Jews who want to get out of Minsk and get to Israel. Best part of the movie, loved it. But the problem is it's only like 15 minutes long, because then we get to the late teenage years, the early college years. He's 19 and he meets this girl Esther, and this takes 2/3 of the movie, which if you're looking back on your life, you probably would just remember the chicks.
And
he remembers he remembers Esther.
Yeah.
And she's a lot, you know, she's still in high school, she's like 16, and they have this tumultuous love affair. She hates it when he goes back to college and cries, and so therefore has to sleep with other men. And he sleeps with married women at college and tells her all about it. And it's, oh my Lord, it's so French.
Ooh la la, I think I will say no, no.
But a lot of people love this movie because they're like, you know what? It's about memory. A lot of times you glaze over the important stuff that happened, but you remember the little tiny details and the insignificant stuff. And there's a lot of that. There's a lot of tiny details and insignificant stuff. And in a movie that started out with Soviet spies and he's in Tajikistan, but then just morphs to, oh my Lord, he's on the train again to go back to see Esther. And there's more problems with Esther and another party. And man, he is really pretentious. He's like a philosophy guy, and he wants to talk about what everything means. And I liked it. A lot of people love it. I certainly did not love it. I mean, you've got major critics spouting, you know, giving the one-liners. This movie means so much, and it's astounding. It's fascinating. And well, no. You and Hannah would have hated it. She's never going to see it.
And it is in French, correct?
It's very much in French. And Marguerite is better than this movie. Marguerite's a lot better than this movie.
Okay.
But maybe it's like Everybody Wants Some. I just don't get it. You know, I guarantee the French people love this movie. And the auteurs in the crowd who know this director, Arnaud Desplechin, know this guy. They love this guy. And they love anything he makes.
But then I definitely know that it probably would not be for me.
Man, it wasn't tough to watch. It was easy, but I'm not getting the meaning, Hannah. And sometimes that frustrates me. You think there must be meaning because everybody loves this movie and I'm not loving it. What am I missing?
Well, and I get confused because then I think maybe I should see it. Maybe I would like it.
No, you won't.
I almost feel there's a challenge in there, but we'll see.
There's a category, though, every year in the critics circle we belong to. The Washington, D.C. Area Film Critics Association has a category called Best Young Actor. And I think the rule is like 20 or 21 at the time of filming. And so I'm going to nominate Esther. I think she was good. She can't write her own script. I think it's her first movie role. He went out and hired kids that have never acted before. So I think, I keep my running award list throughout the year, and she's gonna get one of my nominees for that.
Well, I might need to keep Jaden on my list from Midnight Special and The Confirmation. And
I'm not giving it for The Confirmation.
Confirmation, but in that one, he's with Clive Owen. And so he's getting to play roles with some really good actors.
He's played opposite Clive Owen, Michael Shannon, and Bill Murray.
Pretty good. Pretty good little run this kid's having. So I am going to keep him on my radar for sure.
Well, next week, we actually have movies coming again, like real movies you've seen in multiplex
that
you
wouldn't.
You know, most of the last two or three we've talked about, you're only going to find in New York, LA, DC, and Chicago. Like, that's about it.
Yeah.
So next week, Melissa McCarthy returns. We haven't really seen her since Spy. She's now back in The Boss. I think we're going to see that.
Yep.
There's an animated movie we're going to talk about, April in the Extraordinary World. We're not going to talk about Hardcore Henry because that's screening at the same time as
as
The Boss.
We're going to miss that one.
But to recap this week, this very odd week in films, because Batman vs. Superman is still saturating the movie theaters. We talked about Everybody Wants Some, Richard Linklater, post-Boyhood, could be the sequel of Boyhood, don't know. Could be the sequel of Dazed and Confused, don't know.
Spiritual sequel, I think they called it.
Baseball, beer, chicks. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, it's longer than I thought. Yeah, long movie.
It was too long.
We talked about Ethan Hawke in Born to Be Blue, Chet Baker, trumpet, no, heroin.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story almost was like, heroin makes you play better. And I'm not so sure that's a good little story for all the aspiring musicians out there.
You know, it's true. He said, and he might be right, for Chet Baker, heroin made him play better. He said he could feel the notes.
Yeah, so not so good about that message there. Not feeling it.
I Saw the Light about Hank Williams.
Yeah, I Saw the Light isn't going to work for many people either. Again, good performance, bad movie.
Setting up another music biopic we're going to talk about next week. Miles Ahead about Miles Davis.
Yep.
You Saw Midnight Special.
Yeah.
Michael
also,
Shannon.
Again, a very strange movie. You watch it unfold. It's sort of, again, if you saw Mud, if you liked Mud, I think it's worth checking this one out. If you liked, it doesn't have the unpredictability and the, oh my gosh, drama of the of 10 Cloverfield. But it's similar in that you just have to kind of go with it and watch it unfold and just sort of take it for what it is. And it's like a slow ride. And
it sounds like you're the only person in America comparing Midnight Special to 10 Cloverfield Lane.
I probably am, but that's my unique perspective there. And also, really, I had this flashback at one point in that movie to Escape to Witch Mountain. So any adults who remember Escape to Witch Mountain as a kid will probably recognize a few themes in this movie, even though it's delivered in a much more serious way.
And finally, I saw My Golden Days, a very French, very auteur, very multiple levels. We talked about nostalgia with Everybody Wants Some. This is a nostalgia movie as well. So if you grew up in France and whatever year this was, you'd be like, oh, I remember that. You know,
oui.
So, you know, take your pick. If you haven't seen Batman, I guess go see Batman.
Yeah.
If Everybody Wants Some sounds like, you know, there's going to be a lot of people remember the 80s, so maybe they're going to be all about that. But that hasn't gone nationwide yet. It's only in 19 theaters. So I think look for that to expand over the coming weeks. But once again, thank you for listening to The Cinema Clash.
Merci.
I am Charlie Jewell, charliejewell.com. With me is Hannah Bookdahl.
Here, as always.
And part of the fabulous chickflicks.net.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Cinema Clash with Charlie and Hannah is presented twice each weekend on RadioSt.Pete.com at 5:15 Eastern on Saturday and 9:15 on Sunday mornings. Cinema Clash with Charlie Jewell of CharlieJewell.com and Hannah Buchdahl of chickflix.net. Listen again for Cinema Clash on RadioSt. Pete.com.